except how to get through one. Daniel nodded. Very few entities are powerful enough to create patinas, and those that can guard them closely. The library is here, but Arian's right. We'll need to figure out the way in.
I heard you need an announcer to get through one, Arian said.
Cosmic legend, Annabelle shook her head. Every patina is different. Access is entirely up to the creator. They program the code.
I once heard Cam tell a story at a party about how he accessed a patina, Roland said. Or was that a story about a party that he threw in a patina?
Luce, Daniel said suddenly, making all of them startle in midair. It's you. It was always you.
Luce shrugged. Always me what?
You're the one who always rang the bell. You're the one who had entry to the library. You just need to ring the bell.
Luce looked at the empty street, the fog tinting everything around them brown. What are you talking about? What bell?
Close your eyes, Daniel said. Remember it. Pass into the past and find the bell pull.
Luce was already there, back at the library, the last time she'd been in Vienna with Daniel. Her feet were firmly on the ground. It was raining, and her hair splayed all across her face. Her crimson hair ribbons were soaked, but she didn't care. She was looking for something. There was a short path up the courtyard, then a dark alcove outside the library. It had been cold outside, and a fire blazed within. There, in the musty corner near the door, was a woven cord embroidered with white peonies hanging from a substantial silver bell. She reached into the air and pulled. The angels gasped. Luce opened her eyes. There, in the center of the north side of the street, the row of contemporary townhouses was interrupted at its midpoint by a single, small brown house. A curl of smoke rose from its chimney. The only light, aside from the angel's wings, was the dim yellow glow of a lamp on the sill of the house's front window. The angels landed softly on the empty street, and Daniel's grip around Luce softened. He kissed her hand.
You remembered. Well done.
The brown house was only one story high, while the surrounding townhouses had three levels, so you could see behind the house to parallel streets lined with more modern white stone townhouses. The house was an anomaly. Luce studied its thatched roof, the gabled gate at the edge of a weed-ridden lawn, the arched wooden asymmetrical front door, all of which made the house look as if it belonged in the Middle Ages. Luce took a step toward the house and found herself on a sidewalk. Her eyes fell on the large bronze placard pressed into the packed mud walls. It was a historical marker, which read in big carved letters, The Foundation Library, EXT 1233. Luce looked around the otherwise mundane street. There were recycling bins filled with plastic water bottles, tiny European cars parallel parked so closely that their bumpers were touching, shallow potholes in the road. So we're on a real street in Vienna.
Exactly, Daniel said. If it were daytime, you would see the neighbors, but they wouldn't see you.
Are patinas common? Luce asked. Was there one over the cabin I slept in on the island back in Georgia?
They are highly uncommon. Precious, really.
Daniel shook his head.
That cabin was just the most secluded safe haven we could find on such short notice.
A poor man's patina, Arian said.
I.e. Mr. Cole's summer house, Roland added.
Mr. Cole was a teacher at Sword and Cross. He was mortal, but he'd been a friend to the angels since they'd arrived at the school, and was covering for Luce now that she'd left. It was thanks to Mr. Cole that her parents weren't more worried than usual about her.
How are they made? Luce asked.
Daniel shook his head.
No one knows that except the patina's artist, and there are very few of those.
You remember my friend, Dr. Otto?
She nodded. The doctor's name had been on the tip of her tongue.
He lived here for several hundred years, and even he didn't know how this patina got here.
Daniel studied the building.
I don't know who the librarian is now.
Let's go, Roland said. If the desideratum is here, we need to find it and get out of Vienna before the scale regroup and track us down.
He slid open the latch on the gate and held it aside for the others to pass. The pebble path leading to the brown house was overgrown with wild purple freesia and tangled white orchids, filling the air with their sweet scent. The group reached the heavy wooden door with its arched top and flat iron knocker, and Luce grabbed Daniel's hand. Annabelle rapped on the door. No answer. Then Luce looked up and saw a bell pull, woven with the same stitches as the one she'd rung in the air. She glanced at Daniel. He nodded. She pulled, and the door creaked slowly open, as if the house itself had been expecting them. They peered into a candle-lit hallway, so long Luce couldn't see where it ended. The interior was far bigger than its exterior suggested. Its ceilings were low and curved, like a railroad tunnel through a mountain. Everything was made of a lovely, soft pink brick. The other angels deferred to Daniel and Luce, the only two who'd been there before. Daniel crossed the threshold into the hallway first, holding Luce's hand.
Hello? He called out.
Candlelight flickered on the bricks as the other angels entered, and Roland shut the door behind them. As they walked, Luce was conscious of how quiet the hallway was, of the echoing thumps their shoes made on the smooth stone floor. She paused at the first open doorway on the left side of the hall as a memory flooded her mind. Here, she said, pointing inside the room. It was dark, but for the yellow glow of a lamp on the windowsill, the same light they'd seen from the outside of the house.
Wasn't this Dr. Otto's office?
It was too dark to see clearly, but Luce remembered a fire blazing cheerily in a hearth on the far side of the room. In her memory, the fireplace had been bordered by a dozen bookshelves, crammed with the leather spines of Dr. Otto's library. Hadn't her past self propped her wool-stockinged feet on the footrest near the fire and read Book 4 of Gulliver's Travels? And hadn't the doctor's freely flowing cider made the whole room smell like apples, cloves, and cinnamon?
You're right.
Daniel took a glowing candelabra from its brick alcove in the hallway and held it inside to give the room more light. But the grate over the fireplace was shut, as was the antique wooden secretary in the corner, and even in the warm candlelight, the air seemed cold and stale. The shelves were sagging and distressed by the weight of the books, which were covered with a mist of dust. The window, which had once looked out on a busy residential street, had its dark green shades drawn, giving the room a bleak sense of abandonment.
"No wonder he hasn't answered any of my letters," Daniel said. "It looks as if the doctor has moved on."
Luce moved toward the bookshelves and dragged her finger across a dusty spine. "Do you think one of these books might contain the desired thing we are looking for?" Luce asked, pulling one from the shelf. "Canzoniere by Petrarch, typeset in Gothic font." "I'm sure Dr. Otto wouldn't mind us taking a look around. If it could help us find the desi..." She stopped speaking. She'd heard something, the soft croon of a woman's voice. The angels eyed one another as another sound reached them in the dark library. Now, in addition to the haunting song, came the clopping sound of shoes and the jangle of a cart being wheeled. Daniel moved to the open doorway, and Luce followed, cautiously peering into the hallway. A dark shadow stretched toward them. Candles flickered in the pink stone alcoves of the curved, tunnel-like hallway, distorting the shadow, making its arms look wraith-like and impossibly long. The shadow's owner, a thin woman in a gray pencil skirt, a mustard-colored cardigan, and very high black heels, walked toward them, pushing a fancy silver tea tray on wheels. Her fiery red hair was pulled up in a chignon. Elegant golden hoops glittered in her ears. Something about the way she walked, the way she carried herself, seemed familiar. As the woman crooned her wordless melody, she lifted her head slightly, casting her profile in shadow against the wall. The curve of the nose, the upward swoop of the chin, the short jut of the brow bone, all gave Luce the feeling of déjà vu. She searched her past for other lives where she might have known this woman. Suddenly, the blood drained from Luce's face. All the hair dye in the world couldn't fool her. The woman pushing the tea cart was Miss Sophia Bliss. Before she knew it, Luce had her hands around a cold brass fire poker resting in a stand by the library door. She raised it like a weapon, jaw clenched and heart hammering, and barreled into the hallway. "Luce!" Daniel called. "Dee?" Arian shouted. "Yes, dear," the woman said, a second before she noticed Luce charging at her. She jumped just as Daniel's arm engulfed Luce, holding back her lunge. "What are you doing?" Daniel whispered. She's... Luce struggled against Daniel, feeling his grasp burn her waist. This woman had murdered Penn. She'd tried to kill Luce. Why didn't anyone else want to kill her? Arian and Annabelle ran to Miss Sophia and tackled her in a double hug. Luce blinked. Annabelle kissed the woman's pale cheeks. "I haven't seen you since the Peasants' Revolt in Nottingham. When was that? The 1380s? "Surely it hasn't been that long," the woman said politely, her voice lilting in the same kindly librarian way it had early on at Sword and Cross, when she had tricked Luce into liking her. "Lovely time." "I haven't seen you in a while either," Luce said hotly. She jerked away from Daniel and raised the fire poker again, wishing it were something more deadly. "Not since you murdered my friend." "Oh, dear." The woman did not flinch. She watched Luce coming at her and tapped a slender finger to her lips. "There must be some confusion." Roland stepped forward, separating Luce from Miss Sophia.
"It's just that you look like someone else."
His calm hand on her shoulder made Luce pause.
"What do you mean?" the woman said.
"Oh, of course."
Daniel gave Luce a sad smile.
"You thought she was... We should have told you that trans-eternals often look alike."
"You mean she's not Miss Sophia?"
"Sophia Bliss!" The woman looked as if she'd just bitten into something sour.
"That bitch is still around. I was sure someone would have put her out of her misery by now."
She wrinkled her tiny nose and shrugged at Luce.
"She is my sister, so I can only display a small percentage of the rage I have accumulated over the years toward that disgusting bag."
Luce laughed nervously. The fire poker slipped from her hand and clattered to the floor. She studied the older woman, finding similarities to Miss Sophia, a face that seemed old and young at the same time, and differences. Compared to Sophia's black eyes, this woman's small eyes looked almost golden, emphasized by the matching yellow shade of her cardigan. The scene with the fire poker had embarrassed Luce. She leaned back against the curved brick wall and sank to the ground, feeling empty, unsure whether she was relieved not to have to face Miss Sophia again.
"I'm sorry."
"Don't worry, dear," the woman said brightly. "The day I encounter Sophia again, I'll grab the nearest heavy object and bludgeon her myself." Arian flung out a hand to help Luce up, pulling her so hard her feet shot off the ground.
"Dee's an old friend, and a first-class party animal, might I add. Got the metabolism of a donkey. She almost brought the Crusades to a grinding halt the night she seduced Saladin." Oh, nonsense, Dee said, flapping a hand dismissively.
She's the best storyteller, too, Annabel added. Or she was, before she dropped off the face of the earth. Where have you been hiding, woman?
The woman drew a deep breath, and her golden eyes dampened.
Actually, I fell in love. Oh, Dee, Annabel crooned, clasping the woman's hand. How wonderful!
Otto Z. Otto, the woman sniffed.
May he rest.
Dr. Otto, Daniel said, stepping out of the doorway. You knew Dr. Otto?
Backwards and forwards, the mysterious lady sniffed.
Oops, my manners, Arian said. We must do introductions. Daniel, Roland, I don't think you've ever officially met our friend, Dee.
What a pleasure. I am Paulina Serenity Bissinger.
The woman smiled, dabbed her damp eyes with a lace handkerchief, and extended a hand first to Daniel, then to Roland.
Ms. Bissinger, Roland said. May I ask why the girls call you Dee?
Just an old nickname, love, the woman said, offering the kind of cryptic smile that was Roland's specialty.
When she turned to Luce, her golden eyes lit up.
Ah, Lucinda!
Instead of holding out her hand, Dee opened her arms for a hug, but Luce felt funny about accepting it.
I apologize for the unfortunate resemblance that gave you such a fright. I must say that my sister looks like me. I do not look like her. But you and I have known each other so well over many lifetimes, so very many years. I forget that you might not remember. It was to me that you entrusted your darkest secrets, your love of Daniel, your fears for your future, your confusing feelings about Cam.
Luce flushed, but the woman didn't notice.
And it was to you that I entrusted the very reasons for my existence, as well as the key to everything you seek. You were the one innocent I knew I could always rely upon to do what needed to be done.
I'm sorry I don't remember, Luce stammered, and she was.
Are you an angel?
Transeternal, dear.
They're technically mortals, Daniel explained. But they can live for hundreds, even thousands of years. They've long worked closely with angels.
It all started with great-granddaddy Methuselah, Dee said proudly. He invented prayer. He did.
How did he do that? Luce asked.
Well, in the old days, when mortals wanted something, they just wished for it in a scattershot manner. Granddaddy was the first to appeal to God directly, and, here's the genius part, he asked for a message confirming that he had been heard. God responded with an angel, and the messenger angel was born. It was Gabby, I think, who carved out the airspace between heaven and earth so mortal prayers could flow more freely. Granddaddy loved Gabby, he loved the angels, and he taught all his kin to love them, too. Oh, but that was many years ago.
Why do transeternals live so long? Luce asked.
Because we are enlightened. For our family history with messenger angels, and the fact that we are able to receive an angel's glory without being overcome, as many mortals are, we were rewarded with an extended lifespan. We liaise between angels and other mortals so that the world can always feel a sense of angelic guardianship. We can be killed at any time, of course, but short of assassinations and freak accidents, a transeternal will live on until the end of days. The 24 of us who remain are the last surviving descendants of Methuselah. We used to be exemplary people, but I'm ashamed to say we are in decline. You've heard of the elders of Jishmalim?
The mention of Miss Sophia's evil clan sent a chill through Luce's body.
All transeternals, Dee said. The elders began nobly. There was a time when I was involved with them myself. Of course, the good ones all defected. She glanced at Luce and frowned. Not long after your friend Penn was murdered. Sophia has always had a cruel streak. Now it's become ambitious.
She paused, taking out a white handkerchief to polish a corner of the silver tea card.
Such dark things to speak of on our reunion. There is a bright spot, though. You remembered how to travel through my patina.
Dee beamed at Luce.
Exemplary work. You made that patina? Arian asked. I had no idea you could do that.
Dee raised an eyebrow, the faintest smile on her lips.
A woman can't reveal all her secrets, lest she be taken advantage of. Can she, girls?
She paused.
Well, now that we're all friends again, what brings you to the foundation? I was just about to sit down for my pre-dawn jasmine tea. You really must join me. I always make too much.
She stepped aside to reveal the silver tray packed with a tall silver teapot, china plates of tiny, crustless cucumber sandwiches, fluffy scones with golden raisins, and a crystal bowl brimming with clotted cream and cherries. Luce's stomach flopped at the sight of the food.
So you've been expecting us, Annabelle said, counting the teacups with her finger.
Dee smiled, turned around, and took up wheeling the cart down the hallway again. Luce and the angels jogged to keep up, as Dee's heels clicked along, forking right into a large room made of the same pink brick. There were a bright fire in the corner, a polished oak dining table that could have seated 60, and a huge chandelier made of a petrified tree trunk and decorated with hundreds of sparkling crystal candlesticks. The table was already set with fine china for far more guests than they had in their party. Dee set about filling the teacups with steaming, amber-colored tea.
Very casual here. Just take a seat wherever you like.
After a few purposeful looks from Daniel, Arian finally stepped forward and touched Dee, who was scooping a mound of cream into a goblet and topping it with fruit, lightly on the back.
Actually, Dee, we can't stay for tea. We're in a bit of a hurry. See,
Daniel stepped forward.
Has the news reached you about Lucifer? He is attempting to erase the past by carrying the host of angels forward from the time of the fall to the present.
That would explain the shuddering, Dee murmured, filling another teacup. You can feel the time quakes, too? Luce asked.
Dee nodded.
But most mortals can't, in case you are wondering.
We've come because we need to track down the original location of the fall, Daniel said. The place where Lucifer and the host of heaven will appear. We have to stop him.
Dee looked strangely undeterred from her tea service, continuing to divvy up the cucumber sandwiches. The angels waited for her to respond. A log in the fire splintered, cracked, and tumbled from the grate.
And all because a boy loved a girl, she said at last. Quite disturbing. Really brings out the worst in all the old enemies, doesn't it? Scale coming unhinged, elders killing innocents. So much unpleasantness. As if all you fallen angels didn't have enough to bother with. I say, you must be awfully tired.
She gave Luce a reassuring smile and gestured again for them to sit down. Roland pulled out the chair at the head of the table for Dee and sat down in the seat to her left.
Maybe you can help us.
He motioned for the others to join him. Annabelle and Arian sat beside him, and Luce and Daniel sat across the table. Luce slid her hand over Daniel's, twining her fingers around his. Dee passed the cups of tea around the table. After a clattering of china and spoons stirring sugar into tea, Luce cleared her throat.
We are going to stop Lucifer, Dee. I should hope so.
Daniel grasped Luce's fingers.
Right now, we are searching for three objects that tell the early history of the Fallen. When brought together, they should reveal the original location of the fall.
Dee sipped her tea.
Clever boy. Had any luck?
Daniel produced the leather satchel and unzipped it to reveal the gold and glass halo. An eternity had passed since Luce dove into the sunken church to pry it from the statue's head. Dee's forehead wrinkled.
Yes, I remember that. The angel Semihaza created it, didn't he? Even in prehistory, he had a biting aesthetic. No written texts for him to satirize, so he made this as a sort of commentary on the silly ways mortal artists try to capture angelic glow. Amusing, isn't it? Imagine bearing a hideous basketball hoop on your head. 2 points, and all of that.
Dee. Arian reached into the satchel and pulled out Daniel's book, then thumbed through it until she found the notation in the margin about the desideratum.
We came to Vienna to find this, she pointed. The desired thing. But we're running out of time, and we don't know what it is or where to find it.
How splendid. You've come to the right place.
I knew it, Arian crowed.
She leaned back into her chair and slapped Annabelle, who was politely nibbling at a scone, on the back.
As soon as I saw you, I knew we'd be okay. You have the desideratum, don't you?
No, dear. Dee shook her head.
Then what? Daniel asked.
I am the desideratum. She beamed. I've been waiting such a long time to be called into service.
10. Starshot in the dust.
You're the desideratum?
Lucy's cucumber sandwich fell from her fingers and bounced off her teacup, leaving a glob of mayonnaise on the lace-embroidered tablecloth. Dee beamed at them. There was an almost impish gleam in her golden eyes that made her look more like a teenager than a woman many hundreds of years old. As she pinned a shiny strand of red hair back into her chignon and poured everyone more tea, it was hard to fathom that this elegant, vibrant creature was also, in fact, an artifact.
That's how you got the nickname Dee, isn't it? Luce asked.
Yes.
Dee looked pleased. She winked at Roland.
Then you know where the site of the fall is?
The question brought everyone to attention. Annabelle sat straighter, elongating her long neck. Arian did the opposite, slumping lower in her chair, elbows on the table, chin resting on clasped hands. Roland leaned forward, tucking his dreads behind one shoulder. Daniel clenched Luce's hand. Was Dee the answer to every question they had? She shook her head.
I can help you discover where the fall took place.
Dee set her teacup down in its saucer.
The answer is within me, but I am unable to express it in any way that I or you can understand, not until all of the pieces are in place.
What do you mean, in place? Luce asked. How will we know when that happens? Dee walked over to the fireplace and used a poker to return the fallen log to its place inside.
You will know. We will all know.
But you at least know where the third artifact is.
Roland passed around a plate of sliced lemons after dropping one into his tea.
Indeed, I do.
Our friends, Roland said, Cam, Gabby, and Molly, have gone to Avalon to search for it. If you could help them locate...
You know as well as I that the angels must locate each artifact on their own, Sir Sparks.
I thought you'd say that.
He leaned back in his chair, eyeing Dee.
Please, call me Roland.
And I thought you'd ask, Roland.
She smiled.
I'm glad you did. It makes me feel as if you trust me to help you defeat Lucifer.
She tilted her head at Luce.
Trust is important, don't you think, Lucinda?
Luce looked around the table at the fallen angels she'd first met at Sword and Cross, epochs earlier.
I do.
She'd once had a very different kind of conversation with Miss Sophia, who had described trust as a careless pursuit, a good way to get oneself killed. It was eerie how much the two resembled each other in body, while the words produced by their dissimilar souls differed so completely. Dee reached for the halo in the center of the table. "May I?" Daniel handed over the piece, which Luce knew from personal experience was very heavy. In Dee's hands, it seemed to weigh nothing. Her slender arms were barely long enough to wrap around its gold circumference, but Dee cradled the halo like a child. Her reflection peered back dimly in the glass. "Another reunion," she said softly to herself. When Dee looked up, Luce couldn't tell whether she was content or sad. "It will be wonderful when the third artifact is in your possession." "From your mouth to God's ears," Arian said, pouring something from a fat silver flask into her tea. "That's great-granddaddy's route," Dee said with a smile. Everyone laughed, a little nervously. "Speaking of the third artifact," Dee looked down at a thin gold watch buried among her tangle of pearl bracelets. "Did someone mention you all were rather in a hurry to move on?" There was a clamor of teacups jostling back into their saucers, chairs being pushed back, and wings whooshing open around the table. Suddenly, the massive dining hall seemed smaller and brighter, and Luce felt the familiar tingle run through her body when she saw Daniel's broad wings unfurled. Dee caught her eye. "Lovely, isn't it?" Instead of blushing at being caught staring at Daniel, Luce just smiled, for Dee was on their side. "Every time." "Where to, Captain?" Arian asked Daniel, tucking scones into the pockets of her overalls. "Back to Mount Sinai, right?" Luce said. "Isn't that where we agreed Cam and the others are supposed to meet us?" Daniel glanced toward the door, his forehead wrinkled in agitation.
"Actually, I didn't want to mention this until we'd found the second artifact, but..." "Come on, Grigori," Roland said. "Let's have it."
"Before we left the warehouse," Daniel said, "Phil told me that he received a message from one of the outcasts who he'd sent to Avignon. Cam's group was intercepted."
"Scale?" Dee asked. "Still harboring fantasies of their importance in the cosmic balance?"
"We can't be sure," Daniel said, "though it does seem likely. We will set a course for the Pont Saint-Benazé in Avignon."
He glanced at Annabelle, whose face turned a shade of scarlet.
"What?" she cried. "Why there?"
"My marginalia in the Book of the Watchers suggest it is the approximate location of the third artifact. It should have been Cam, Gabby and Molly's first stop."
Annabelle looked away and didn't say anything else. The mood turned serious as the group filed out of the dining room. Luce felt tense with worry for Cam and Molly, imagining them bound up in black scale cloaks like Arian and Annabelle. Angel wings rustled along the narrow brick walls as they walked back down the endless hallway. When they reached the curved wooden doorway leading back outside, Dee swung open an iron circle covering the peephole and peered out. She let the peephole swing shut.
"What is it?" Luce asked.
But by then, Dee had already opened up the door and was gesturing for everyone to leave the peculiar brown house, whose soul was so much richer than its exterior suggested. Luce went first and stood on the porch, which was really just a heap of frost-kissed straw, to wait for the others. The angels poured out of the doorway one at a time. Daniel, arching his white wings back as he exited chest out. Annabelle, tucking her thick silver wings fast to her sides. Roland, bundling his golden marble wings around the front of his body like an invincible shield. And Arian, plowing through recklessly, cursing an unnoticed candle by the doorway that singed a tip of wing. Afterward, all the angels stood together on the lawn and flexed their wings, glad to be out in the crisp air again. Luce noticed the darkness. She was certain that when they'd entered the foundation, the sun had not been far from rising. The church bells had chimed once more, announcing 4 o'clock, and the sky had been grasping for the precious gold of dawn. Had they been inside with Dee for just an hour? Why was the sky now a dark, dead-of-night blue? Lights were on in the white stone townhouses. People passed behind the windows, frying eggs, pouring cups of coffee. Men with briefcases and women in smart suits walked out their front doors and, without ever once glancing at the congregation of angels in the middle of the street, got into cars and drove away toward what Luce assumed was work. She remembered Daniel had explained that Viennese people could not see them when they were inside the patina. They didn't see the brown house at all. Luce watched a woman in a black terry cloth bathrobe and a plastic rain bonnet walk groggily toward them with her small furry dog. Her property bordered the overgrown pebble path that led to the front door of the foundation. The woman and her dog stepped onto the path and disappeared. Luce gasped, but then Daniel pointed behind her to the other side of the foundation's lawn. She spun around. 40 feet away, where the pebble path ended and the modern sidewalk picked up once again, the woman and her dog reappeared. The dog yapped hysterically, but the woman walked on as if nothing had disturbed her morning routine. It was strange, Luce realized, that the angel's whole mission was to keep her life that way, so that nothing happened to erase this woman's world, so that she never even noticed how much danger she'd been in. But while the people on the street might not have noticed Luce or the angels, they certainly did notice the sky. The woman with the dog kept glancing up at it worriedly, and most of the people, leaving their houses, wore slickers and carried umbrellas. "Is it going to rain?" Luce had flown through pockets of rain with Daniel, warm showers that left them refreshed and exhilarated. But this sky was ominous, nearly black. "No," Dee said. "It isn't going to rain. That's the scale." "What?" Luce's head shot up. She squinted at the sky, horrified when it shifted and pitched. Storm clouds didn't move like that. "The sky is dark with their wings," Arian shuddered. "And their cloaks." "No." Luce stared at the sky until it began to make sense. With a feeling akin to vertigo, she made out an undulating mass of blue-gray wings. They were smeared across the sky, thick as a coat of paint, blocking out the rising sun. The beats of the short, brutish wings buzzed like a swarm of hornets. Her heart clenched as she tried to count them. It was impossible. How many hundreds hovered in the multitude above?
"We're under siege," Daniel said.
"They are so close," Luce said, flinching as the sky roiled. "Can they see us?" "Not exactly, but they know we are here," Dee said nonchalantly, as a small group of scale swooped lower, low enough for them to see their shriveled, bloodthirsty faces. Cold eyes trolled the space where Luce and the others were gathered, but when it came to the patina, scale seemed to be about as blind as the outcasts.
"My patina surrounds us, the way a tea cozy surrounds a pot, forming a protective barrier. The scale can't see or travel through it."
Dee managed to smile at Luce.
"It only answers to the ringing of a certain kind of soul, one innocent of its own potential."
Daniel's wings pulsed beside her.
"They are gathering more brethren all the time. We need some way to get out of here, and we need to hurry."
"I do not intend to be bound in one of their broke-neck burkas," Dee said. "No one takes me in my own house."
"I like the way she talks," Annabelle said sideways to Luce.
"Follow me," Dee
shouted, breaking into a run along a gated alley. They jogged behind her, through an unexpected pumpkin patch, around an ornate and dilapidated gazebo, and into an expansive and lushly green backyard. Roland's chin tilted toward the sky. It was darker now, denser with wings.
What's the plan?
Well, for starters... Dee wandered over to stand under a mottled oak tree in the center of the garden. The library must be destroyed. Luce gasped. Why?
Simple mechanics. This patina has always encompassed the library, so with the library it must stay. In order to move past the scale, we'll have to open the patina, thereby exposing the foundation, and I do not intend to leave it for their indiscriminating wings to root through.
Her hand patted Luce's stricken face.
Don't worry, dear. I've already donated the valuable volumes in the collection. To the Vatican, mostly, though some went to the Huntington, and to an unsuspecting little town in Arkansas. No one will miss this place. I'm the last librarian here, and frankly, I don't plan to return after this mission.
I still don't understand how we get past them.
Daniel's gaze stayed fixed on the swirling blue-black sky.
I will have to produce a second patina, surrounding only our bodies, guaranteeing us safe passage. Then I will open this one and let the scale flow in.
I think I'm smelling what you're cooking, Arian said, climbing up a branch like a monkey to sit nestled in the oak tree.
The foundation will be sacrificed, Dee frowned, but at least the scale will make nice kindling.
Hold on, how does the library get sacrificed?
Roland crossed his arms over his chest and looked down at Dee.
I was hoping you could help with that, Roland, Dee said, eyes twinkling. You are rather good at starting fires, aren't you?
Roland raised his eyebrows, but Dee had already turned around. Facing the tree trunk, she reached for a knot in its bark, pulled it like a secret doorknob, and opened the trunk to a hollowed chamber. Inside, the wood was polished, the chamber about the size of a small locker. Dee's arm dipped in and pulled out a long golden key.
That's how you open the patina? Luce asked, surprised that it required so physical a key. Well, this is how I unlock it, so that it can be manipulated for our needs.
When you open it, if there's a fire, Luce said, remembering the way the woman walking her dog had blinked out of existence for a moment while she crossed the foundation's front lawn.
What will happen to the houses, to the people on the street?
Funny thing about the patina, Dee said, kneeling down and rooting around in the garden for something. The way it sits on the border between realities past and present, we can be here and not here, in the present and also elsewhere. It's a place where everything we imagine about time and space comes together materially.
She lifted up the fronds of an oversized fern, then dug in the dirt with her hands.
No mortals outside will be affected, but if the scale are as ravenous as we all know they are, as soon as I open this patina, they'll swoop right toward us. For one tense moment, they will join us in the elsewhere reality when the Foundation Library stood on this street.
And we'll fly out, enclosed in the second patina, Daniel gasped.
Precisely, Dee said. Then we have only to close this one around them. Just as they can't get in now, they won't be able to get out then. And while we soar on safely to lovely ancient Avignon, the library will go up in smoke, with the scale trapped inside.
It's brilliant, Daniel said. The scale will still technically be alive, so our action won't tip the heavenly balance, but they'll be...
burn marks of the past, sealed off, out of our way. Right. Everybody on board?
Dee's face lit up.
Ah, there it is.
As Luce and the angels stood over her, Dee brushed the dirt off a collared hole that had been buried in the garden. She closed her eyes, held the key close to her heart, and whispered a blessing.
Light surround us, love enfold us, shelter us, Bettina, from the evil that must come.
Carefully, she fit the key into the lock. Her wrist shook with the force required to turn the key, but finally it creaked a quarter turn to the right. Dee exhaled heavily and rose to her feet, wiping her hands on her skirt.
Here we go!
She raised her arms above her head and then, very slowly, very purposefully, brought them down toward her heart. Luce waited for the earth to shift, for anything to happen. But for a moment, nothing seemed to have changed. Then, as the space around them grew pin-drop quiet, Luce heard an almost inaudible swishing sound, like bare palms being rubbed together. The air seemed to slightly warp, making everything, the brown house, the row of Viennese townhouses surrounding it, even the blue wings of the scale above, waver. Colors bent, melted. It was like standing inside the cloudy haze that rises from flowing gasoline. As before, Luce could both see and not see the patina. Its amorphous boundary was visible one moment, with the iridescent transparency of a soap bubble. Then it disappeared. But she could feel it molding around the small space in the garden where she and the others stood, emanating warmth and the feeling of being embraced by something powerfully protective. No one spoke, silenced by the wonder of Dee. Luce studied the old woman, who was humming so intensely she almost seemed to buzz. Luce was surprised when she sensed the inner patina was complete. Something that hadn't felt whole a moment before now did. Dee nodded, her hands at her heart, as if in prayer.
We are in the patina, within the patina. We are in the heart of safety and security. When I open the outer rim to the scale, trust that security and remain calm. No harm can come to you.
She whispered the words again.
Light surround us, love enfold us, shelter us, Bettina, from the evil that must come.
And Luce found herself murmuring along. Daniel's voice chimed in, too. Then there was a hole, like a gust of cold air entering a warm room. They shuffled closer together, wings pressing up against each other, Luce in the center. They watched the shifting sky. A savage shriek came from high above, and a thousand others joined in. The scale could see it now. They swarmed toward the hole. The opening was mostly invisible to Luce, but it must have been directly over the chimney of the brown house. That was where the scale headed, like winged ants attacking a drop of fallen jam. They thudded to the roof, to the grass, to the eaves of the house. Their cloaks rippled with the impact of rough landings. Their eyes trolled the property, both sensing and not sensing Luce, Dee, and the angels. Luce held her breath, did not make a sound. The scale kept coming. Soon the yard bristled with her stiff blue wings. They surrounded Dee's inner patina, casting glances hungry as wolves directly at the place where the prey they sought were hiding. But the scale could not see the angels, the girl and the transeternal, safe inside.
"Where are they?"
one of them snarled, his cloak tangling in a sea of blue wings as he pushed through the crowd of his brethren.
They're here somewhere.
Prepare to fly fast and hard to Avignon, Dee whispered, standing stiffly, as a scale angel with a birthmark splashed across his face leaned in near the limits of their patina and sniffed like a pig seeking slop. Arian's wings were trembling, and Luce knew she was thinking of what the scale had done to her. Luce reached for her friend's hand.
"Roland, how about that mighty conflagration?" Daniel said through pursed lips.
"You got it."
Roland interlaced his fingers and furrowed his brow, then gave one hard glance at the brown house. There was a great blast, like a detonating bomb, and the Foundation library exploded. Scale were sent shrieking into the patina sky, their cloaks engulfed in finger-like flames. Roland waved his hand, and the hole where the library had stood became a volcano, spewing flames and lava rivers through the lawn. The oak tree caught fire. Flames spread through its branches as if they were matches in a box. Luce was sweating and dizzy from the heat searing through the patina, but even as the scale were blown back by repercussive shock waves, the group inside Dee's small patina did not burn. Dee shouted, "Let's fly!" just as a tornado of hot, flame-laden air swirled through the yard, swallowing 100 scale and lifting them into its blazing core, carouseling them across the lawn. "Ready, Luce?" Daniel's arms wrapped around her, just as Roland's wrapped tight around Dee. Smoke ricocheted off the walls and the outside of the patina, but Luce was having a hard time breathing through her sore, bruised neck. Then Daniel lifted her off the ground. They flew straight up. Out of the corners of her eyes, Luce saw Roland's marbled wings on the right, Annabelle and Arian on the left. All the angels' wings were beating so fast and hard that they wove a pure, blinding brightness straight up out of the fire and into clear blue air. But the patina was still open. The scale, who could still fly, had some sense that they were being tricked, trapped. They tried to rise out of the blaze, but Roland sent another wave of flame washing down onto them, thrusting them back into the burning earth, singeing off their crinkled skin until they were skeletons with wings. "Just another moment!" Dee's fingertips and steady gaze manipulated the boundaries of the patina. Luce studied Dee, then the mess of burning scale. She imagined the patina cinching at the top like a cloak around a neck, sealing the scale inside, choking them out. "All done!" Dee shouted, as Roland took her higher through the air. Luce looked down, beneath her and Daniel's feet, as the ground sped away from them. She saw the ugly fire blink, then shiver and then disappear, swallowed into a smoking hidden elsewhere. The street they left below was white and modern and full of people who had never sensed anything at all. The ground was miles beneath them when Luce stopped envisioning scale wings cooking in red flames. There was no use looking back. She could only look ahead toward the next relic, toward Cam, Gabby, and Molly, toward Avignon. Through gaps in the thin sheets of clouds, the terrain became rocky, dark gray, and mountainous. The winter air grew colder, sharper, and the ceaseless beat of angel wings shattered the quiet at the edges of the atmosphere. About an hour into the flight, Roland's marbled wings came into view, a few feet below Luce and Daniel. He carried Dee the same way Daniel carried Luce, shoulders lined up with hers, one arm wrapped over her chest, the other around her waist. Like Luce, Dee crossed her legs at the ankles, and her stiletto heels dangled precariously, so high above the ground. Roland's dark muscles, encasing Dee's frail, older frame, made the pair look almost comical as they came into and out of focus, rippling through the clouds. But the thrilled sparkle in Dee's eyes made her seem much younger than she was. Strands of her red hair whipped across her cheek, and her scent, cold cream and roses, perfumed the air through which they flew. "Well, I think the coast is clear," Dee said. Luce felt the air around her warble. Her body tensed in preparation for another timequake. But this time, it wasn't Lucifer's encroaching fall causing the ripple. It was Dee withdrawing the second patina. A hazy boundary moved closer to Luce's skin, then passed through her, making her shiver with an untraceable pleasure. Then it retracted until it was a tiny orb of light around Dee. She closed her eyes and, a moment later, absorbed the patina into her skin. It was mostly invisible and was one of the most beautiful things Luce had ever seen. Dee smiled and beckoned Luce nearer with a little wave. The two angels carrying them tilted their wings upward so that the ladies could talk. Dee cupped a hand over her mouth and called to Luce over the wind.
"So tell me, dear, how did you two meet?"
Luce felt Daniel's shoulder shudder behind her with a chuckle. It was a normal question to ask two people in a happy relationship. Why did it make Luce miserable? Because the answer was needlessly complicated. Because she didn't even know the answer. She pressed a hand to the locket at her neck. It bobbed against her skin as Daniel's wings beat another strong stroke.
"Well, we went to the same school, and I..."
"Oh, Lucinda,"
Dee was laughing.
"I was teasing. I merely wondered whether you had uncovered the story behind your original meeting."
"No, Dee," Daniel said firmly. "She's not learned that yet."
"I've asked, but he won't tell me."
Luce eyed the vertiginous drop below, feeling as far away from the truth of that first meeting as she was from the towns over which they were flying.
"It drives me crazy that I don't know." "All in good time, dear," Dee said calmly, staring straight ahead at the curved horizon. "I take it you have tapped into at least some of your earlier memories?"
Luce nodded.
"Brilliant. I'll settle for the tale of the earliest romance you can recall. Go on, dear. Humor an old lady. It'll help us pass the time to Avignon, like Canterbury pilgrims."
A memory flashed before Luce's eyes. The cold, damp tomb she'd been locked in with Daniel in Egypt. The way his lips had pressed against hers, their bodies against each other, as though they were the last two people in the world. But they hadn't been alone. Bill had been there, too. He'd been there, waiting, watching, wanting her soul to die inside a dank Egyptian tomb. Luce snapped her eyes open, returning to the present, where his red eyes could not find her.
"I'm tired," she said.
"Rest," Daniel said softly.
"No, I'm tired of being punished simply because I love you, Daniel. I don't want anything to do with Lucifer, with Scale and outcasts and whatever other sides there are. I'm not a pawn. I'm a person. And I've had enough."
Daniel wrapped his hand over Luce's and squeezed. Dee and Roland both looked as if they wanted to reach out and do the same.
"You've changed, dear," Dee said.
"Since when?"
"Since before. I've never heard you talk like that. Have you, Daniel?"
Daniel was quiet for a moment. Finally, over the sounds of wind and a flapping of the angel's wings against thin air, he said,
"No, but I'm glad she can now."
"And why not? It's a transdimensional tragedy what you kids have been through. But this is a girl with tenacity, a girl with muscles, a girl who once told me she would never cut her hair, even though she was cursed, your words, dear, by snarls and tangles, a magnet for briars, because that hair was a part of her, indelibly tied to her soul."
Luce squinted at the old woman.
"What are you talking about?"
Dee tilted her head at Luce and pursed her plump lips. Luce stared at her hard, at her golden eyes and fine red hair, at the delicate way she hummed as they flew. And it hit her.
"I remember you."
"Lovely," Dee said. "I remember you, too."
"Didn't I live in a hut on an open plain?"
Dee nodded.
"And we did talk about my hair. I'd run through a patch of nettles, diving after something on a hunt. Was it a fox?"
"You were quite the tomboy. Braver than some of the men on the prairie, actually."
"And you," Luce said, "you spent hours picking them out of my hair."
I was your favorite auntie, figuratively speaking. You used to say the devil cursed you with such thick hair. A trifle dramatic, but you were only 16, and not far off from the truth, as only 16-year-olds can be. You said a curse is only a curse if I allowed myself